headlines this hour. Israeli authorities approve plans for the construction of more than 3,000 Schlechter units in the occupied West Bank. Iran renews its call for the formation of a broad-based government in Kabul, as Tehran hosts a conference of Afghanistan's neighbors. And Europe's economic powerhouse, Germany, downgrades its projected economic growth for 2021 amid the coronavirus pandemic. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mies. Good to have you with us. Israel is pushing ahead with plans to build over 3,000 Schlechter units in the occupied West Bank. An official with the regime's Ministry for Military Affairs announced the final approval for building 1,800 Schlechter units and preliminary approval for the construction of over 1,300 more units. The U.S. earlier voiced concern over Israel's decision to move forward with the plans. Palestinian resistance groups have also issued a joint statement warning the Israeli regime against pressing ahead with the settlement construction plans. Mona Kandil says Israel's plan to build over 3,000 Schlechter units in the occupied West Bank will give the regime an opportunity to seize more Palestinian land.
The Israeli regime approved the building of some 3,000 new Schlechter units in a number of Israeli settlements across the occupied West Bank, and then it declared it gave also the final approval for 1,300 new Schlechter units in the occupied West Bank. Palestinians say that these thousands of Schlechter units aimed at giving the settlers an opportunity to seize more Palestinian lands and to annex it to the illegal settlements, moving a step forward in the direction of annexation of the occupied West Bank. The Israeli settlements are illegal, according to the international community and according to the majority of the world. The Palestinians say that these settlements were built on private Palestinian lands, on lands that are supposed to be part of the future Palestinian state. However, the Israeli regime, not only the current Israeli regime, but all the Israeli regimes, and it's a very well-known Israeli policy that settlements are considered part of the so-called state of Israel, and they are considered as Israeli cities, not lands occupied by this occupying regime. So they would continue to ignore all the calls, whether from the international community or even this harsh, let's say, statement from the American administration. They will proceed, however, up to the moment that the Israeli regime didn't face any sanctions against its policy.
One-day conference of Afghan neighbors held in the Iranian capital has come to an end. Speaking at a news conference following the event, Iran's foreign minister reiterated Tehran's call for a broad-based government in Afghanistan.
An all-inclusive government should be formed in Afghanistan with the participation of all ethnic groups. International legitimacy without domestic acceptability will lead nowhere. All neighboring countries should encourage all Afghan sides to establish a broad-based government.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian added that only an all-inclusive government can bring about unity in Afghanistan. Said that Tehran will provide advisory assistance to Afghan parties to fight terrorism. The top diplomat noted that Afghan people are bearing the brunt of the U.S. invasion and its 20-year occupation of the country. Foreign ministers of Pakistan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan, as well as the Russian and Chinese ambassadors, attended the conference. The Russian and Chinese foreign ministers, as well as the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, virtually addressed the meeting. Our correspondent spoke with Iran's foreign ministry spokesman, Saeed Khatibzadeh, on the sidelines of the Tehran conference. He told us that the participating countries are pursuing active diplomacy to ensure Afghanistan will be a peaceful and prosperous nation in the not-too-distant future.
We are in a very critical situation regarding Afghanistan. What is happening right now in Tehran is an attempt by all six neighboring countries of Afghanistan to work together for the peaceful and prosperous Afghanistan in near future. What we are seeing right now in Tehran is an active diplomacy trying to bring together all different factions of thoughts about the future of Afghanistan to clarify what are the main principles that everybody can agree on. We are trying to show that all neighboring countries of Afghanistan can work together for a better better future for Afghanistan, and trying to materialize the will of the people of Afghanistan, whom they are actually subject to this critical situation. What we are seeing right now is the very catastrophic ramifications of United States invasion of Afghanistan, and this irresponsible runaway of the of Washington. What we are doing right now is trying to actually bring together the different players who can actually have an effective role, and Tehran is a place that we hope that we can provide a better ground for the next round, which is going to happen in Beijing soon.
Russia says the U.S. and other Western countries use Afghanistan as a tool for attaining their narrow geopolitical goals. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov made the remarks in a video address to a ministerial meeting of Afghanistan's neighbors held in the Iranian capital. Lavrov stressed that NATO members, including the U.S., are the ones who created Afghanistan's current predicament and should bear responsibility for the country's socioeconomic recovery. Russia's top diplomat also called on Afghanistan's neighbors to prevent the military presence of the U.S. and NATO forces in their territory following their withdrawal from Afghanistan earlier this year.
We call on Afghanistan's neighboring countries not to allow a military presence of U.S. and NATO forces that plan to move there after leaving Afghanistan's territory.
Lavrov also highlighted Moscow's support for the formation of an inclusive government that represents all Afghan national minorities and political forces. He also noted that the Taliban government has a real, although elusive, opportunity to bring Afghanistan back to the global stage as a responsible and peaceful country. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi also addressed the conference, saying the Taliban are eager to have dialogue with the international community. He also called on the world to help Afghanistan's development.
Iran's capital, Tehran, has hosted a meeting on its neighboring country, Afghanistan. The top diplomats of Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Pakistan have attended the gathering in person, while the Chinese and Russian foreign ministers were present online. The UN chief also sent a message to the summit online.
We need to keep engaging to help move things in the right direction. Force Afghanistan and the region also need a country that is secure, not one that is a haven for terrorism or a center for drug trafficking. This is vital to peace and stability in the region and around the world. Excellencies, these are all issues on which the region has a shared interest and on which all of us must speak with one voice. We can only achieve more stability with a united approach. Together, let us act with determination and without delay to help the people of Afghanistan and to secure a better future for all.
The Wednesday conference took place a week after the third meeting of the Moscow format consultations on Afghanistan was held in the Russian capital. The Tehran meeting is aimed at stepping up collaborations between Afghanistan's neighboring countries and creating lasting peace there. Iran has always strongly advised against the interference of foreigners in Afghanistan's affairs and respected the country's independence and territorial integrity. It has also urged the formation of an inclusive government in the country.
In Afghanistan, we are facing a situation that in order to reach an acceptable point for all Afghans, we still have a long way ahead of us.
Amir Abdullahian said this is a joint press conference with the visiting Pakistani counterpart, Shah Mahmood Qureshi, in Tehran. He added that Iran was pursuing contacts with all neighbors to Afghanistan to make sure the utmost use of capacities was achieved at its border crossings for trade and humanitarian aid delivery.
Well, in this meeting, there wasn't a shortage of issues that Afghanistan needs to deal with the help from its neighbors. Terrorism, drug trafficking, the situation of human rights and women were some of the topics that were brought up in the discussions. The notion of an all-inclusive government also remained a key concern. Many problems that Afghanistan is facing today are the results of long years of U.S. and foreign occupation, as pointed out by the participants.
The United States is a major factor in the current mess in Afghanistan. The U.S. military led the invasion of Afghanistan in 2001 in what it proclaimed was a war on terror, meant to eradicate the Taliban. 20 years on, in mid-August this year, the Afghan government and military collapsed in the face of the Taliban's swift advances on the ground, which many attribute to a hasty withdrawal of U.S.-led occupation forces from the country. The UN World Food Program says 3.2 million children under 5 are close to acute malnutrition. Afghanistan is now on the brink of bankruptcy. The U.S. has frozen $10 billion of the country's assets in a bid to bring poor and war-weary Afghans to their knees. The resurgence of the Daesh terrorist group on the back of the U.S. exit has created fresh security challenges for the Taliban-ruled country. It's believed that the presence of Daesh terrorists in Afghanistan perfectly serves the interests of Americans.
Well, yeah, Islamic State has been used by the U.S., as has Al-Qaeda inside Syria. So they use these proxies to destroy the stability of countries.
Afghanistan lies at the crossroads of South and Central Asia. It has been rocked by a series of terrorist attacks in recent weeks, which killed scores of people, most of them were Shia worshippers. There are reports that in the months before the U.S.-led coalition forces left the country, thousands of terrorists made their way to Afghanistan from Central Asia, North Caucasus, Pakistan, and China's Xinjiang region. Most of them were recruited by Daesh.
Every indication is that the U.S. will try, which is why this inclusive government is needed to resist such abilities to drive a wedge in society.
These foreign terrorists slipped into the country under the nose of U.S. and NATO forces. The American presence in the war-ravaged country, often described as the graveyard of empires, not only failed to wipe out the threat of terrorism, but further fanned its flames.
Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri Khani says that his country is ready to return to talks aimed at removing anti-Tehran sanctions. In a tweet, Bagheri Khani said that Tehran agrees to start the negotiations before the end of November, but did not provide an exact date. Officials said that he had serious and constructive talks on the issue with the European Union Special Coordinator on Iran, Enrique Mora. The negotiations aimed at removing sanctions against Iran started in April, but have been stalled since June. Tehran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal conducted multiple rounds of talks in that time period. The landmark agreement, known as the JCPOA, was thrown into chaos after Washington's unilateral withdrawal in 2018. Petrol stations in Iran are gradually returning to normal after a cyber attack disrupted the smart card system used to buy subsidized fuel at pumps. The Secretary of Iran's Supreme Council of Cyberspace says that experts investigating the incident have come across signs of a cyber attack. Abul Hassan Firuz Abadi noted the attack was probably carried out by a foreign country with the aim of disrupting public services. Earlier, Iranian oil ministry officials reported a gradual return of fuel stations to full functionality. They also stated that nearly 50% of the country's petrol stations were already selling fuel at unsubsidized rates through cash payments despite the incident. Earlier, we were joined by political commentator Daniel Lazar, who gave us his thoughts on the cyber attack that disrupted fuel stations in Iran.
My first suspicion is that it would be Israel, because Israel has a capability, and Israel is clearly out to harass Iran at every opportunity. But Iran has other enemies in the region, and it's possible that they're involved instead. So I really can't be sure who is behind these attacks. This is really an important development. I mean, cyber security, cyber vulnerability is very important. And a wide range of actors are using cyber attacks to harass governments they don't like. And it's often difficult to attribute them to any one actor. So, and that way they're kind of ideal. It's a way of causing damage and being able to hide your own responsibility. So that makes it especially troublesome, and I assume that other countries will face these attacks as well. And Iran seems to be especially vulnerable at this time, but it's very hard to sort of figure out what's going on here.
Germany downgrading its projected economic growth for 2021 as the nation struggles to rebound from a downturn due to the coronavirus pandemic. But Europe's economic powerhouse is predicting that its economy would only expand by 2.6% this year. That is lower than the previously estimated 3.5%. Bottlenecks in the supply chain and shortages of raw materials are complicating Germany's post-pandemic recovery. This happens as Social Democrats are preparing to form a new government by December the 6th after winning last month's elections. Following Germany's growth forecast, European main stock markets opened lower on Wednesday. That's all the time we have for this edition of World News. So bye-bye for now.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Britain's National Health Service could soon be unable to deliver the care it needs to for women giving birth if the surge in COVID cases continues, the president of the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists has said. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's health editor, Andrew Gregory. The piece is titled, NHS Maternity Services Near Breaking Point, Warns Top Doctor. National Health Service could soon be unable to deliver the care it needs to for women giving birth if the surge in COVID cases continues. The president of Britain's Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists has said. Dr. Edward Morris, Britain's most senior gynecologist, became the latest high-ranking clinician to raise the alarm about the increasing pressure on the National Health Service. As COVID cases rise and it battles a huge backlog of 5.7 million patients caused by the first and the second wave of the virus. He told The Guardian he was increasingly concerned about the immense pressures facing maternity staff. The latest figures suggest the sharp rise in new cases reported in recent weeks is now having an impact on hospital numbers, with average daily COVID hospital admissions in England at their highest level for nearly 8 months. The latest data shows 39,962 people reporting testing positive for COVID on Sunday, with 328,287 testing positive in the last 7 days, and 949 deaths during the same period. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, on Sunday, 24th of October, publicly ruled out immediately moving to the government's coronavirus Plan B, a suite of light-touch measures such as working from home and compulsory face masks in some settings. The Chancellor said the data did not suggest such a move was necessary, despite reports that Britain's Health Security Agency, UKHSA, was canvassing the level of support among local authorities for the immediate rollout of the winter plan, the clearest sign yet that Whitehall is actively considering additional measures. Dr. Edward Morris said the surge in COVID infections also threatened to derail efforts to tackle a huge backlog in cases of women waiting for gynecological treatment. Senior doctors say operations are already being cancelled in some parts of the country. President of the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, Dr. Edward Morris, raised fears patient safety could be put at risk in maternity wards if the increase in COVID cases and hospitalizations resulted in specialist staff being redeployed to other parts of hospitals, as happened in the first coronavirus wave. The COVID-19 pandemic is far from over, and we're becoming increasingly concerned about the immense pressure facing our maternity staff this winter if the situation continues as it is, he said. We're also aware of the many women and girls who are suffering with gynecological conditions that are currently on extensive waiting lists with no end in sight. With a number of COVID-19 cases rising once more, the National Health Service could soon be in a situation where it is unable to deliver the care it needs to or deal with the huge backlog that has already built up. Dr. Morris added, we know during the first wave of the pandemic, maternity staff were redeployed to different areas of the hospital, and we would urge NHS trusts and boards to avoid this at all costs. Maternity staff could not be replaced by other staff groups due to their specialist skill set, he said. And protecting this workforce was crucial to ensuring that safe maternity care can be sustained. Dr. Edward Morris urged unvaccinated pregnant women to urgently get jabbed. Figures show almost a fifth of the most critically ill coronavirus patients in England in recent months were unvaccinated pregnant women. We're seeing higher numbers of pregnant women in critical care than at any other point during the pandemic, and the vast majority of these women are sadly unvaccinated. Vaccination against COVID-19 and flu is the best way for pregnant women to protect themselves and their baby this winter. Both Labour and the Liberal Democrats have called for some Plan B measures to be introduced, and the National Health Service Confederation on Wednesday became the first major organisation to warn that rising cases risk derailing efforts to tackle the backlog. On Sunday, 24th of October, Rishi Sunak announced funding worth almost £6 billion aimed at tackling waiting lists. In an effort to get a grip on the crisis, the Chancellor unveiled plans for investment in the National Health Service capital funding to help deliver about 30% more elective activity by 2024-2025, compared with pre-pandemic levels. This is equivalent to millions more checks, scans, and procedures for non-emergency patients. Dr. Catherine Henderson, the president of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine, warned on Sunday, 24th of October, that emergency departments were in a terrible place. She told Sky News' Trevor Phillips on Sunday, "We're already struggling to cope. This is not something that's coming in the next couple of months. We're already in a terrible place where we have got large queues of ambulances with vulnerable people waiting in those ambulances to be offloaded into departments and other patients at home, waiting to be picked up by the ambulance. That's the thing that's really worrying me, that these are patients who have not yet received treatment, that we don't necessarily know what's wrong with them, and we're really struggling to get into our healthcare facilities to then work out what we need to do. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has previously said vaccines will get the country through the winter and out of the pandemic. But on Sunday, Professor Adam Finn, who is a member of the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunization, said the vaccine program would not be enough to bring infection rates under control. Professor Adam Finn said people should be testing themselves, wearing face masks and avoiding crowds in enclosed spaces in order to prevent a real meltdown in what he described as a worsening situation. While vaccines were very effective at stopping people from getting seriously ill, he said, they were not so effective at stopping infections altogether or stopping the virus spreading. They do have an effect on that, but they're not by themselves going to be enough at the present time to keep the spread of the coronavirus under control, he told Sky News' Trevor Phillips. I would like to re-emphasize the fact that the vaccine program by itself in the current situation, even if things go optimally, is not, in my opinion, enough to bring things under control.
There are all kinds of production units in the country. Some manufacture goods we use every day, such as home appliances, automobiles, or apparel, just to name a few. Others produce industrial machinery or even the energy required to power up industrial units. There are also other industrial facilities that produce iron or steel. But one thing all these fields of work have in common is the use of advanced technology used for production. Advanced technology has never been more important than it is today with the fast pace of industry expansion in the country.
Oh, how's it going? Welcome to another edition of Bazaar, your weekly program that analyzes various industries, markets, profits, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we will explore the manufacturing industry for research-based technologies. We will uncover how companies use the abundant raw material available in the country to produce goods, saving the country billions on imports. Time to enter today's bazaar.
Want to take a particular look at some of the machines and technology that production units use. So our journey took us to Damande Incorporated, which was established over five decades ago. From its humble beginnings, this company has grown into a well-established name for fans and blowers. The company is one of the largest manufacturers of electromotors and heating and cooling systems in the West Asian region. It makes over hundreds of types of ventilation systems, original equipment parts, and heating and cooling fans. Basically, fans and blowers are used to move air, gas, or other particles. Its largest fan is the high-tech roof mount centrifugal fan, which is typically used in factories for ventilation. Its products are used in homes, factories, tunnels, and industrial-scale settings. This company has a vast production unit that is located on the outskirts of the capital city, Tehran, and it can produce well over 10,000 units per day and nearly 3 million units annually. Fans are designed by highly experienced mechanical engineers based on the type of application of the fan. Also, this company employs hundreds of other highly specialized personnel.
There are thousands of different fans and blowers in the market for different applications. For instance, kitchen ovens use fans for convection to produce circulating air. In other places, fans are used for ventilation in office buildings or indoor car parks. In general, Iran has little need to import fans unless they are used for special purposes such as power plants or in the oil refining industries.
All manufacturing steps from start to finish are completed at its production facilities. The majority of raw material needed to produce these items are also domestically purchased. However, there is a small percentage of material that is imported for certain specialized fans. This company is registered and certified by Iran's Industrial Research and Standard Institute and has received numerous awards for its high-quality products. It is certified by international standardization bodies and has received various ISO certification for management and quality. One of the competitive advantages of this manufacturer is its decades of experience. This has allowed it to refine its products over the years to produce dependable items with the highest quality. This manufacturer has been exporting its fans and blowers to Central Asia and most neighboring countries, among many others. This company has never stopped expanding throughout the years. It might be interesting to know that this company has been operating throughout several historical eras. It remained active before and during the Islamic Revolution and the 8 years of imposed war with Iraq. And it has continued its activity even through tough imposed economic sanctions. It has been able to overcome these challenges, which it sees as growth opportunities.
Iran is a country that is rich in natural reserves. It is fully able to supply raw materials such as steel and petrochemical products to domestic industries. In fact, Iran's steel mills produced over 20 million tons of steel in the first 8 months of this year. This shows an almost 10% increase in productions since 2020 and a growing domestic demand.
Iran ranks as the world's 10th biggest crude steel producer by a recent report by the World Steel Association. China was the top producer of steel, followed by India, Japan, and the United States. Based on figures from Iran's Steel Producers Association, around 15 million tons worth $7 billion of steel can be exported annually. The Iranian steel industry has been constantly developing over the past years. This is despite all the pressures and obstacles created by outside forces like the US sanctions and the coronavirus outbreak. On another note, Iran is also a large producer of petrochemical products as well. The country has a capacity to produce some 60 million tons worth of petrochemical products. That's based on figures from the Iranian Oil, Gas, and Petrochemical Products Exporters Union. According to these statistics, around 28 million tons of these products were produced last year. Of this amount, around 8 million tons were domestically consumed, and 20 million tons were exported to countries around the world. Industry associations estimate that Iran can potentially export $50 billion worth of these items each year.
So, in terms of raw material, Iranian manufacturers are mostly dependent on local productions of raw material to make their products. But not all products are equal. Some require more research and development to add value, which increases their sales profits. These items are usually advanced technologies that are created to serve very special needs in the industry.
The number of knowledge-based companies has increased over the years with a strong engineering base in the country. If there were 50 high-tech firms in 2013, now there are 125 times more than that number in 2021. Currently, there are over 6,200 high-tech firms and knowledge-based companies across the country. The company we mentioned earlier in the program is just one example of a diverse range of high-tech manufacturers. By indigenizing various technologies to meet domestic needs, these companies have saved the country millions in capital flight. Based on statistics from the Science and Technology Office of the Vice Presidency, some 40 knowledge-based companies are listed in the stock market. This is part of an initiative implemented by the government to increase capital in support of hard work of knowledge-based manufacturers. Also, the Central Bank of Iran has distributed some $3 billion in loans to high-tech firms and research companies to help facilitate their growth. Other plans are underway, with the office incorporating with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to boost exports of technology and production know-how. Exports are projected to reach pre-sanctions level with a value of over $1 billion by the end of this year. That's according to the Vice Presidential Office for Science and Technology.
Well, it is time for me to take a break and pass the action over to my good friend and colleague, who will bring to you an educational report.
It was around 2,000 years ago when paper was first invented, something which marked man's giant leap in the learning process, for it allowed ideas to be recorded and easily passed on to others. Today, educational supplies are not limited to papers, and companies like EEI are working on daily basis to design stuff that turn learning into a hobby. Stay with me to learn more about this Iranian company.
Educational Equipment Industries Company, or shortly EEI, was launched in 1974. It is a leading designer, manufacturer, and a distributor of educational and training instruments for schools, universities, and vocational training centers in Iran. It also produces scientific entertainment games and training toys and designs brain teasers for out-of-class activities. Learning is easier with games. This is one of the mottos of the company. EEI produces toys that make complicated scientific subjects easier to grasp for children. With a dedicated R&D team constantly monitoring the market, Educational Equipment Industries Company tries to stay up to date and tap into technological advances to produce smarter products.
The company tries to catch up with modern trends in education to tailor its products to modern demands. For example, over the past decades, it has been producing conventional microscope, but now it is producing this digital microscope, which displays the image on a monitor and allows both users and the audience to view the image immediately and analyze it.
With such a diverse array of educational supplies, the ambitious company says it is eyeing for a larger market by scouting for international clients. Beside its bid to gain worldwide recognition, EEI tries to take education to the next level by exploring innovative ways to facilitate learning. It is planning to launch a production line of educational tablets that make school material fun to learn.
With an experience stretching for half a century, the Iranian brand says it commits itself to adapting to modern trends in education. It says this is to fulfill its goal of making learning an enjoyable experience for all generations.
Many thanks for that wonderful adventure. Great stuff. So let's dive right into some news and trends regarding Iran's high-tech industries and manufacturers. One of the current trends we are seeing is the government's keenness to help knowledge-based companies increase their exports. The Science and Technology Office has launched several plans and programs that provide special support to these companies.
One of the biggest programs in the works is to help companies with standardizations. This program assesses compatibility of Iranian knowledge-based products with global markets through the World Trade Organization standards. The plan also aims to attract foreign investment and the participation of Iranians who live abroad. Government officials and industry participants say this is a significant step which keeps Iranian products relevant in the international arena.
The atmosphere of Iran's tech industries is buzzing with growth, and Iran is looking to strengthen its regional collaborations in the field of information and communications technologies, or ICT.
Iran's ICT minister participated in the annual Transportation and Communication Forum in Turkey this year. Issa Zarepour introduced several Iranian ICT products and talented tech firms at the forum. The minister also signed an agreement with his Turkish counterpart to implement joint projects for cybersecurity measures and other ICT developments. Other topics that were discussed included border transit and the establishment of joint border data centers. The forum centered around the theme of logistics mobility digitalization. It was attended by representatives from 55 countries worldwide.
A major Iranian copper producer has offered large investments to companies in the field of high-tech manufacturing to upgrade its aging facilities.
The goal is to encourage tech firms and startups to present innovative solutions to the sector's age-old technological gaps. This initiative will help introduce domestic industries with tech investment opportunities, which will also focus on the tech ecosystem's target markets. The copper producer says incorporating cutting-edge technologies will have a positive direct impact on other fields. So far, 7 contracts worth $2 million have been signed with tech companies and the copper producer. This investment plan was also facilitated by Iran's National Innovation Fund.
By the way, and I want to tell you about Iran's drug production on this episode of Bazaar. Iran has been under heavy sanctions, yes, but the country's drug production capacity is really high. Different factories with an impressively high production capacity are at work. Some make up to 200 types of medicine, some of which are produced under foreign licenses in Iran. Apart from regular medicines such as antibiotics and over-the-counter painkillers, Iran has managed to enter the realm of complex medicine such as radiopharmaceuticals and biologic drugs for special illnesses. To familiarize you with these realms, we paid a visit to Osve Company.
We're talking an area on Tehran's outskirts, an area packed with factories, automobile factories, and pharmaceutical, petrochemical, and clothes factories, among others. It's an area to the west of Tehran, close to Alborz province. Our intended factory is also on a road to Alborz province, the Osve Pharmaceutical Factory, with a varied range of drugs to produce. Osve is a public stock company. It was established as early as 1966, but it has managed to adapt to new research and findings. For example, a medicine this company is proud to have produced in Iran is Deferasirox. Its non-generic name is Osvarol, and what it does is it reduces blood iron levels for patients in need of long blood transfusions, such as patients suffering from thalassemia or chronic low blood counts. It makes medicine to control blood pressure and to cure migraine, insomnia and depression, nephrology, diabetes and blood lipids. It also makes various vitamins. A common ailment among Iranians is high blood pressure due to their high levels of salt consumption and sedentary lifestyles. A third of Iranians over 30 suffer from this. At least 100,000 people allegedly die from high blood pressure each year. The health ministry has done a lot to control this, but 40% of people with high blood pressure don't even know they have it. But what has Osve done for those suffering from it?
You are all aware not everyone exercises to need just dietary supplements. Many an ailment can be prevented with a little exercise, but too many people are too busy for that. There are those illnesses that have nothing to do with exercise, however, but are hereditary. For those, plenty of medicine is needed.
But drug consumption is generally high in Iran, such that Iran ranks 20 among countries of the world, with each Iranian annually consuming 4 times as much medicine as the world standard. Iran, with its 80 million population, consumes as much medicine as China, with its population of 1.3 billion. But does this mean Iranians get ill more often? No, actually. It's just that their use of drugs is unregulated. And to meet their demand, Iran has plenty of pharmaceutical factories active in research and expansion and quality production. They even export some of their items manufactured.
Going by the statistics of Iran's Food and Drug Administration, about 95% of drugs required domestically are produced in Iran. In the early days of the Islamic Revolution, Iran produced only about 500 drugs. But now, this country's producing 3,000 drugs in 4,000 pharmaceutical variations. Iran has at present 15 pharmaceutical faculties, which train scores of pharmacists and researchers each year. Also, over 100 drug distributing companies are active in Iran today. In spite of the glittering statistics, however, there are those who say some 40% of the raw material for these drugs are imported from mainly India. But the Ministry of Health counts these drugs as part of the same 95% domestic produce. And there are the many who believe it's altogether irrelevant where the raw material comes from, because the art of pharmacology is to know how to mix those raw materials. Also, to domestically produce all the raw material needed may not even be cost efficient. The biggest obstacle to the Iranian industry, such as the pharmaceutical industries, is cruel US sanctions. US authorities have time and again stressed that Iran's pharmaceutical sector is exempt from sanctions. But imposing sanctions on the finance and money transfer sector is practically as good as boycotting the pharmaceutical sector. This hypocritical act by both Democrat and Republican US officials has caused hundreds of patients to die. Patients whose medicine Iran has not yet managed to make domestic, that is, to adapt as native to Iran. In spite of all this pressure, Iranian companies have managed even to export their produce. These exports have also been touched by US sanctions, however. This is while Iran's domestic drug market is worth $4.5 billion, and it is said Iranian-produced drugs are twice the country's domestic need. In other words, Iran could easily satisfy regional countries' pharmaceutical needs if only US sanctions could have been omitted from the equation. This company has enjoyed many achievements in Iran, but even on an international scale, it has acquired 2 licenses for innovation, health and safety, and quality from the German ICS Group.
Modern pharmaceutical methods are a continuation of that path, but with greater precision and the use of chemistry. But with yet greater scientific advancement, today medicine is made with proteins derived from living cells cultured in the lab. This is called biopharmacology. You may have heard the names of some of these biopharmaceuticals, such as hormones like insulin or growth hormones, blood factor vaccines for anemia stemming from hepatitis B, and several other names to cure tough-to-treat illnesses. These drugs have been effective in curing common forms of cancer, such as breast cancer, in chemotherapy, in curing several arthritis of the joints, chronic kidney failure, and several other ailments. Knowledge-based companies in Iran have managed to make over 20 base or blueprint medicines, and Iran is a forerunner in biopharmaceuticals. Such medicines are about 146 worldwide, and Iran aims to bring its figures up to 40 soon. These drugs will be much cheaper than their foreign equivalents. Iran these days has managed to export its drugs to some 17 countries, and given its biopharmaceutical know-how, it has succeeded in greatly alleviating its patients' pain. A prominent company in this field is Sinergen. Amir Mehdi Kazemi, a dear friend, visited this company to learn about the range of its products. Don't miss this report, because you're in for a surprise.
Less than 3 decades ago, a big idea came to the minds of a group of Iranian biotechnologists. The aim was to help cure patients with chronic diseases in Iran and across the world. That was a turning point for the pharmaceutical industry of Iran.
A few years later, the same group of scientists, who were now joined by a considerable number of their colleagues, decided to establish a center for the production of biopharmaceuticals, a company which today takes its steps on the edge of science. People here believe that their ambition is beyond imagination. In the year 2000, Sinagen took the first steps towards producing recombinant proteins and monoclonal antibodies aimed at manufacturing biopharmaceuticals. Today, a diverse range of biomedicines are produced at this facility near Karach City, about 50 kilometers west of the capital, Tehran.
The novel idea of making such a company came about 25 years ago with the novel idea of a group of young scientists. Actually, we manufacture a huge basket of different products in the field of biosimilars. We are a market leader.
We take a look into the most advanced biopharmaceutical facility in the Middle East, a maze of high-tech clean rooms and laboratories where some of the world's latest technologies are being used. Recombinant DNA technology is a technique that introduces the gene of interest in a host, which in this case is Chinese hamster ovary or bacterial cells. It all starts from the cell culture department, where recombinant cells are fed and grown in what is known as a culture media to produce the protein of interest and the biopharmaceutical used for treatment of a particular disease. The medicine is then extracted from a complex mixture and purified using chromatography steps and purification techniques. Thousands of square meters of clean room space, dozens of bioreactor containers, and elite staff wearing special suits, an environment rarely seen anywhere else in the Middle East. Currently, the team of experts at the company take their steps shoulder to shoulder with their counterparts in the U.S. and Europe, observing international quality and state-of-the-art good manufacturing practices, or GMP standards, has enabled the company to supply a part of the world markets with medicines that offer the same quality of their reference products with competitive prices.
Actually, in this department, we control or reject the quality of the product, even the packaging material or anything that comes and enter the production area and quality control area, based on the guidelines and regulation in the world class. And that's how we get the GMP certificate from the top regulatory bodies.
The manufacturing of sophisticated medicines for the treatment of incurable diseases such as multiple sclerosis and cancer, as well as other maladies like osteoporosis, anemia, and renal failure, are no longer under the monopoly of pharmaceutical giants in the West. In fact, new powerful players are emerging with new ambitions that include sharing their sciences with others and helping to cure patients in less prosperous societies across the world next to their commercial objectives.
Many thanks once again. Don't forget to leave your comments on our social pages, as your opinions will help us improve. Till next week, when we'll introduce you to other Iranian products, goodbye and God be with you.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Heartbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.